and welcome to the sixth episode of our second series of the Dublin Maker podcast. I am your host, Vicky Toomey-Lee, your maker advocate from the Dublin Maker team. And in this episode, I'm talking to Amanda Joliffe from Microsoft Streamspace. In this episode, we have Amanda Joliffe from Microsoft Streamspace. So, hi, Amanda. It's great to have you on our podcast.
Hey, Vicky. Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
So let's start with who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so as you said, Vicky, my name is Amanda Joliffe, and I lead Dreamspace. My role is Dreamspace lead in Microsoft Ireland. My background is actually in secondary education. So I was a PE and science teacher and an ICT coordinator. And I won't go into all the details of how I ended up in Microsoft, because people always go, how did you end up there at all? But anyway, I work in Dreamspace now. And for those, I suppose, that are listening who haven't heard of Dreamspace, Dreamspace is our STEM education venue in our Microsoft Ireland headquarter building in Dublin. So it's where we bring students from all across Ireland, both primary and secondary school students, to experience STEM and digital technologies in kind of exciting ways, I suppose, and trying to just open their mind to what that's all about, the potential of that, and excite them about kind of their role in the future alongside those things like STEM and digital technology. That's kind of in a nutshell what we do, but I think we're probably going to delve into that a little bit deeper across the podcast, so I'll stop there for the moment.
So I remember when I first started with Dreamspace, and then I got invited by a friend to check it out. It was just blew my mind, and I couldn't believe that kids get to visit the campus, first of all, and then seeing all the technology, but actually having a space for themselves, as it's called Dreamspace. But you do so many activities. Every time I've been there, it's always buzzing with kids and people visiting. You probably have activities running at the time in parallel with me walking in the background, and there's another person walking around checking out the venue. And then you've had a lot of events as well, highlighting, you know, why STEAM is important. And I've even participated, I think, in one year with I think you had the Grace Hopper local, and you had a section where an hour for makers to show off stuff. And I think I was at one of the maker tables showing off the Raspberry Pi and the micro bits and stuff like that. But I noticed that you had a lot of activities anyway, you know, even before Dreamspace came about, you ran a lot of activities. But I suppose the main, can you tell me like an example, say, how do you reach out to schools, or how do schools find out about you, and it right at the beginning? And then we'll kind of work your way, like, it's like a journey. How did you get to where you are right now? All the things that you found that kind of challenges, I suppose. Because a lot of schools are thinking of putting in maker spaces, or are in the process of with whatever restrictions they have right now with COVID, a lot of people kind of have to hold off on it. But there are a lot of kind of educators who are interested in a lot of the activities you're doing. Where are they going to look for help? And also it's a great place to see an example of activities that you can run. And I suppose it's going to be a long conversation, because Dreamspace has come such a long way, but it's just, the journey has been amazing from what you started to what you have now.
Yeah, I like the idea of the way we're doing it, because sometimes I go into calls and people go, so tell us about Dreamspace. And I'd be like, oh God, okay, here we go, you know, like dive in. And it's because, as you said, there's like a lot has changed, like we've moved and evolved over the last few years. Like it opened in April 2018. And, you know, initially what was happening was, you know, we had a website, dreamspace.ie. So, you know, you said they're a teacher. So like, you know, we did a bit of a push on things like the social media channels and stuff to let people know, look, hey, this is a place you can come visit. It is free. You know, you just need to book in and get yourself up to us from wherever you are in Ireland. And the idea was that, you know, these students, primary or secondary school students, would come into our building, like you said, onto the campus itself for 3 hours. Part of that would be an initial just kind of walk around the building itself, just to kind of give people an idea of the kind of workspaces. And then we would go into Dream Space and kind of, you know, get stuck in then to the activities, talk about, you know, as you said, STEAM, broadly speaking, you know, science, technology, engineering, art and maths, but then also like the types of skills that STEAM is very good at fostering, you know, the creativity, the collaboration that's required, you know, even from the maker side, you know, all these different ideas been thrown in together and seeing like the best possible product you can make out of all these ideas, and trying to really encourage students to work on those skills as throughout the kind of time they were with us. So yeah, it began with just literally, as I said, those 3-hour visits from the schools. And at the start, it was, I suppose, just myself as a teacher. But we realized quite quickly that schools were very keen to engage with us. Like, there was great uptake of the experience. Like you said, schools are, you know, they're looking at like, what can we do in our school? How can we replicate some of this stuff? So they're coming in, they're taking in the environment, they're observing their own students in that environment. And most teachers from, we engaged in some research with Maynooth University from the start, and we saw from what the teachers were saying in that they were blown away by, you know, the collaborative nature of the students, how well a lot of their students engaged in the activities, whether it be like maker challenges or whether it be like coding challenges, like no matter what, they saw the value in it. But one of the things that was highlighted in that initial research from the teacher side was that they just wanted a little bit more support, like, and how they could do it. So they saw the value, but it was like, how do we do it? So that kind of brought us then, say, into year two with the evolution of Dream Space. And in year two, then we're really lucky that, you know, our Microsoft Ireland governance team basically invested kind of more money, I suppose, into the program. And that allowed us then to hire more teachers. So now we've grown our team from myself as one teacher to actually 4 teachers. So we have 2 secondary school and 2 primary school teachers. And that allows us to shape these really good, or we aim anyway, to shape these really good pedagogical kind of experiences that are really going to link into curriculum for teachers, but also show the value of STEAM. And with that, what we were able to start doing before COVID, of course, was still have people come into the building every day with 2 teachers on site to facilitate that experience. But we were also able to start going on the road. So, you know, up until March 2020, we were out visiting like regional centres around the country. You know, alongside that, we were running these teacher training sessions to kind of facilitate that need that we had seen in the research. And we were going great guns. And then, March happened. So I suppose, and we can get onto that in a minute about how we switched things up. But we have been learning a lot. And I think, you know, related to maybe the likes of the maker side of things and stuff, that's always been a key. I think the maker culture is something that, like, I definitely wasn't as aware of that. Like, I, through my role in Dream Space, through the likes of colleagues like, you know, Stephen Hell, and then meeting people like yourself and Pam O'Brien and all these people that are Chris Raina, all these people who are brilliant in this maker space, that's definitely opened the door for me to go, oh wow, like, we can really push the boundaries of what can be done. And I'd love to think that aha moment I had from meeting the likes of you guys is what we give teachers to, hopefully, you know, when they visit us, you know.
Whenever, like, I think of Dream Space, for some reason I always think of the younger kids. But I keep forgetting that there's secondary school kids that are interested as well, because when I think of like Coda Dojo, I always think of the older kids tend to just go off and do their thing, and we have to support the younger ones who are curious about things as well. So I never kind of, I think for me, for my own personal stuff, it's either the over 18s or the really young ones that need help, and the ones in the middle, the kind of events that I go to, there's always far and few between. So I think it's great that teachers bring kids of that age group coming along.
Yeah.
And with the introduction of the Leaving Cert computer science curriculum, and that's even more important. And has that been kind of worked in some of the activities on the lead up that because you know that the curriculum is coming around, it's going to happen. And I'm wondering how the kids of that age group, how do you engage with their interests? What did you find surprising compared to the younger age group, where you can give them a scratch, give them microbits and things light up is great, but when you reach a certain age, you need to challenge them a bit more, and the reasoning is not just enough to blink the lights?
Yeah.
how do you get them to, because at that stage, you know, they have to think of projects,
yeah,
kind of say, okay, just do something, just make something, go, and they just sit there going, what do I make? So how do you get that out of them, you know, get that excitement as they did, like if compared to the primary school kids who are like just doing everything, they just like pick up stuff and they run with it, whereas I think the older age group of kids, they tend to be more reserved,
yeah,
I found, and quite a lot more quiet, and do you find that a challenge? And also, as I said, with the Leaving Cert curriculum for computer science that just came in, have you seen an uptick in secondary school teachers as well, and inquiries in the whole area of the of coding, of electronics, as a feed into it? I haven't looked like into the Leaving Cert curriculum too much. Mm. It's probably just mostly all software, but
there's kind of hardware in it as well. The microprocessor is one of the learning tasks too, so I think a lot of people are using Microbit for that one. You've hit the nail on the head there about the students. Yeah, you're spot on. Like, you know, the primary school students, when they come in, they're just, you know, they're excited to be there, they're excited to see these devices on the table, and it's like, yeah, let's get going. And as you said, the Microbit lights up and it's like, wow. And you know, oh god, I miss those moments where you're in the room with them and they're sitting there and their little faces light up. And they're great at taking on the challenges we give them too. Like, we do set specific kind of challenges, and what we're trying to do is ground the challenges in like everyday life as much as possible. Now, the younger students might not realize that as much, but for example, with the younger students, we often do our sessions around the global goals. So like, even with the likes of the Microbit, it's like trying to use the Microbit to solve a global goal, you know, that kind of idea. So it's kind of, there's a reason behind the task after they've got familiar. But with, you're spot on, with the secondary school students, I think they more than ever need to be like, they need to understand why am I here? Like, what does this have to do with me, you know, as a person? So you really have to, make sure that you're kind of getting the message across here. For what we try to do is basically to kind of make the point that, look, this is where technology is now at. So for example, with the older students, we spend a little bit more discussing things like artificial intelligence, because a lot of them are using sites, you know, every day that, you know, have AI running in the background, and they actually don't even realize that that's what that is. So we spend a lot on things like that, and that tweaks their interests, because they're thinking it's an everyday life thing for them. It's something that's outside of the norm maybe for them, because they're not really used to talking about social media sites, you know, or any other site like that, like streaming sites and things. And for us then to be able to talk about things like AI, and then what that does is it sets the level playing field of like why it's important to them. And, you know, that kind of, I think, for older students is important. But then what we're able to do is pair it back and go, well, behind that AI is computer science. And so let's go look at what that is, you know, if they've never done it before. So then that lets us to move into that activity with them to say, OK, let's go do some coding, so that they're not going straight into the coding wondering, but what is this, and like, what's got to do with me? They're now seeing, OK, this is behind all the technology we use, including this AI that we've just learned about, etc. So I think that's really important for that kind of older age group. The other thing is, it's funny, like, say one of the kind of challenges we give them is that like marble run challenge, you know, that kind of maker challenge idea. It's a bit of a competition. I think that always gets them as well, when it's a bit of a competition between them. We actually split the groups up, so they don't get to pick their own teams. Normally when they arrived into us, we already had a little number and a letter on their badges, so that was just their groups and there was no arguments about it. And it was really interesting. The teachers used to love that. They used to say, I'm so happy you put them into groups, because they'd never work together, or that group would never work together. And we'd have this competition, like, how long will your marble run hitting the equipment we've given you and landing in that zone, that end zone piece that we've given you. And it was great watching that play out. The noise in the room was always hilarious. The cheers, the, you know, trying to scout out the competition, you know, is always a great buzz. So I think that little bit of competition always helps with the older groups too. I think that's something that's always played out well as well. Sorry, I know I'm talking on here.
That's great. It's great that you use that, like, even though they've seen each other every day, as you say, the groups are kind of start forming their own kind of little niche groups, or friends, and or hang out with each other, but having to mingle with other people and having this icebreaker, and actually figuring out how to do a challenge together, and that's actually quite good because it's fun as well, and it's not too difficult. You know, where, you know, when it's not down to one person trying to debug this one line of code.
Exactly. Like yeah.
That. And everyone just sitting there, just like, what do I do now? So it's fantastic that you're getting hands on. It's not just technology. And then you introduce them into the concepts. So what is kind of particularly you find the question that gets asked a lot, I suppose, what the activities for, say, let's go back to the younger, younger kind of primary school kids. Like what kind of activities do you normally run, say, in one particular program? I suppose you have lots of different programs customed to the teachers, I suppose, depending on what they want. So what is the most popular one that you've done in Dream Space, and that teachers can take away with them, that they can also implement that in their classrooms as well?
Yeah, we do. We have options. Like there's kind of an overall, when you go onto our website, you'll see when you go into request a session, there's kind of an overall blurb there of two different options for both primary and secondary. However, what I would say is we don't just go with that either. We basically don't have on the shelf lessons, so to speak. So what happens is the school books, and then it kind of kicks off a whole period of correspondence with the teacher. And part of that correspondence is for the teacher to fill in a survey in which they'll let us know what has this group done before. And there's like tick box exercises for that, you know, multiple choice options. You know, what's their exposure to things like maker challenges? What's their exposure to coding? If they have had coding, what have they used? And we're trying to really get into that nitty gritty. So in fact, like in some instances, we have done more advanced coding with the primary school group in the morning, and then done the beginner version in the afternoon with a secondary school group, because there's such different varieties of context. So we, as a team, I suppose that's where our expertise comes in as a teacher, is to be able to be like, okay, let's adapt this content to suit this group as learners. And that's kind of what the beauty of our team, I think, which is one of the powerful things that we can do. So that's kind of the thing, I suppose, Vicky, about it. But I suppose broadly speaking, what happens is we have, what would we say, like a toolbox of activities. So when we read that survey from the teachers, we can say, okay, this is what they have done. Let's go to our toolbox and see what we'll do as a result. So we might go, I would say is we always try and do at least 1 hour of coding. And the reason for that, back to your last question, even about the Leaving Cert Computer Science, is just purely for the exposure piece. Like we've seen.
So what kind of coding languages, I suppose, for the younger audience, you start off a scratch, I say, or you use I love telling people about MakeCode, you know, as well. So you to predominantly use MakeCode for initiating people into kind of visual programming.
Correct.
And which direction do you go to? What languages, as they get a bit more inquisitive and want to say, okay, I'm done with this, is there more I can do? So what kind of languages do you advise or suggest kids to go on to, both, I suppose, primary and secondary, because people learn at different speeds and different curiosities, I suppose?
Yeah, that's the beauty of it, because what you'll find is, even on those surveys, say a primary school teacher, they might say, you know, 25 of the group have never done coding, but there's 5 in the group that are in Coder Dojo or something like that, right? So you're kind of going, okay, so there's going to be a couple arriving that are like, we've done this, we've done this, we've done this. And then there's a few that literally are like, we don't know what coding is, right? So you're spot on, and you have to have that flexibility with the activities. I suppose the beauty of MakeCode, which is, as you said, an introductory kind of programming environment with just that visual language, like the blocks, similar to Scratch, is that normally when we introduce that to the group, say, and we know there's people in the group that have done a good bit more coding, we're able to straight off the bat say, hey, like folks, the people who have done some coding before, you know what you can do on MakeCode, you can toggle over. So actually you can click a button to go to JavaScript, or you can click it. They've now added also Python. Which actually is great, because in the Leaving Cert Computer Science, they're the two languages that are in the course, the two programming languages.
Yeah, it's great to see Python there, because I'm Python background, so I don't know how much you know about me, but I used to run the Python R&D user groups for over 10 years, and now I run the monthly PyLadies meetup group. So Python's always a little soft spot in my heart, because it's kind of a great learning language, and it's great to see it. And I'm a big fan of MakeCode. When it comes to electronics, if people don't know, do a search for MakeCode, and you will see, you know, you can play around with electronics without actually physically having the electronics.
Yes, I love that.
The micro bits, the Adafruit Playground Circuit Playground Express.
Yeah,
make your own games.
Yeah,
and it, there's an emulator there as well, so you don't need the hardware. So if it comes where someone come runs along, or a kid, or not a kid, an adult kid, say, I think I want to buy this, but are you sure you want to buy this? Try this out and see what you think, and have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah,
before putting a lot of expense, even though the devices are not expensive. You can still try, and also it makes it a bit more accessible for whole class to be able to do something wherever they are, if they have access to a computer and internet access.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great facility that it's not just coding, you can actually access these hardwares, which makes it even more fun, or Lego, or there's just so much in there. And and for a lot of makers, I notice, especially when you do nowadays, we watch a lot of YouTube videos on what makers are doing, especially for me, I'm a big fan of Adafruit, and they use, you know, visual programming languages a lot, like MakeCode a lot, because you can prototype something.
Yes.
So people say, it's just like, as you say, it's kind of looks basic, but if you just want to get something done, you can prototype your project. And with MakeCode, say if you're using something like the Circuit Playground Express or a MicroBits, and you want to come up with a prod, think of how you have an idea, you can quickly see if it works.
Yes, yeah.
And then, you know, and the thing is, you can actually debug it, run it several times without having to unplug and all this kind of stuff. And
it's brilliant.
Like, upload and all that.
You've hit the nail on the head there. That's one of the big reasons we use things like MakeCode for MicroBit and MakeCode Arcade with the game design, is exactly that reason. You know, we're very aware ourselves as a team of teachers that, you know, schools can only work with the resources they have, but at least if they have any device that can access a browser, they can get going, you know, like you said, because the simulator is there, they can do the code on, like they can work away. So for us in DreamSpace, it's like a lot of the activities we try and do, even the maker challenges, is just with like basic materials. Like, so the maker challenges, we try and use what you would have as a primary school teacher in your art and craft store, that you don't have to go down.
What kind of maker challenges do you have? Do you have a one particular one that you always pull out?
Well, the Marvel Run,
unless we spoil it.
Yeah, the Marvel Run's a big one. We do a tower challenge as well. Similar, I know Pam does a great one with paper. We kind of give them a little bit more than that. You know, we give them a little bit more, but the paper chat, they say that, for example, both of them we have related back also to our coding elements. So for example, to kind of explain the tower one, where we give them the pack to build a tower, we then basically get them to program the MicroBit to pick up a shake. So basically the tower has to be able to withstand a shake, and we're trying to introduce then curriculum. So again, because we're working with teachers here who are really keen to get involved, but who also are under pressure to cover off the curriculum that they do. So we're trying to say, look, you can include this as part of your curriculum area. So in geography, when you're teaching about earthquakes, why not give them a maker challenge to build a tower, and it has to withstand an earthquake? And then why not code a MicroBit to pick up the shake and alert them if there's an earthquake? And so we're trying to see how easy it is to fit STEAM within and throughout the curriculum, instead of trying to say to teachers, you have to go off and upskill in just this one area. It's like, how can we start plugging it in across the curriculum? So with the Marble Run, it was like getting the MicroBit to be a timer. So how quickly does the marble travel? And then that brings in science, because then can you calculate speed? Because you know the distance and you know the time. And, you know, that type of thing. So we're trying to always make these links back into curriculum for the teachers who are present in the room.
And did the kids kind of find it kind of natural to think of all these things, doing it without even actually knowing that they're doing it?
Yeah.
So
it is interesting. Yeah, like they do. I love watching them do the maker challenges, because like we said there, the groups are picked for them. So they're out of their comfort zone kind of from the start in some ways, because they didn't get to pick to be with their friend a lot of the ways, unless it's pure fluke and they have ended up that way. But it's really nice to just sit back and watch them debate, you know, because they are like, no, I think we should do it this way. And that's a great skill, you know, to have to kind of compromise and reach compromises together, to talk about ideas, to fail, like very often, especially with the likes of the Marble Run, like constant failure and being like, we have to go fix that again. They don't even realize they're failing. It's not the same as being given a grade that's a fail on a paper. Yeah. You know, it's because the reaction is completely different to that. You know, generally, if you've got a fail,
you're experimenting all the time.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
There's a bit more get up and go. Yeah.
I suppose as you get older, I suppose we always have the stigma of failing, and be having to allow to do these activities in a space where you've freedom to do whatever you want, given the materials and whatever imagination, and also intriguing and basically pulling that kind of getting that going, getting the brain going, like myself right now, trying to get my brain going and trying to figure out, like, how do you solve this problem? And also you have people, different skills coming out that people think that, oh, I don't think I can do that technical challenge, but they have other skills.
Yeah.
I suppose you can see the natural forming team coming out. Someone will end up project managing everything and making sure, oh, time is running out. You have to do this.
Yeah.
And you have the other ones that are a bit more who actually just like technical challenges and doing stuff. And then the other ones just, and then some people just like the creative aspects.
Yeah.
It, you know, making it really nice, and then how to make it, you know, more usable and all that. So kind of all these kind of things that people don't, I suppose everyone in the team gets a chance to participate and do something and contribute some, whereas mostly if you just say, okay, let's just do a coding challenge and everyone just sits there. So it's kind of changed a lot to given a piece of paper and a chat and just say, just do this.
Oh, exactly. Whereas
you're trying to make it really fun, and also you're pulling all the things, and it benefits everyone, from the teachers, from yourselves, trying to understand how you can improve on these activities, to the kids who are actually enjoying all this and not even realizing that they're acquiring all these kind of, I suppose the buzzword now is the 21st century skills, where, you know, they're acquiring all these skills that will benefit not just in a school, but for a life as they get older, and how it benefits society, as you say, like with teaching them about AI and how they use, when they use their devices and the things that they use every day. And then having, I suppose, as they get older, they start thinking about debating issues about ethics and all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, which is actually a big part of one of our current experiences, is the ethical debates that we're doing, which is fascinating to watch the older students engage with and give their view on. But anyway, sorry, I cut across you. Continue. Yeah.
No, it's okay. So like you, as I said, you've been doing, Dreamscape is doing amazing activities, but I noticed that you've been quite busy on the other side of things, with production, as in being on TV. Like that was
on
that,
our on mini TV, on screens, maybe on devices. Yeah.
So tell the listeners about that particular part of Dream Space, where I'll let you talk about it, so I won't spoil it too much.
No worries. Yeah, of course. So basically, like, all the stuff we kind of really talked about now has nearly been the in-person stuff, which we look forward to getting back to hopefully soon. But yeah, like from March 2020, we knew straight away we were at home. We still wanted to support families at home, teachers trying to work with remote education, and obviously the students themselves, and kind of give them this opportunity to engage in the kind of STEAM. So what we did was we set up what we call the Home Space series, which was back from March to kind of June 2020. And that was kind of like these on demand, you could join live or watch webinars across a variety of things, from MakeCode to a STEAM series that had guest speakers, and there was kind of maker challenges within them, and so on. There was one on AI, there's one on Python. We did that. And what we noticed really, Vicky, about that was there was great uptake of that from an on-demand point of view. So what we noticed was, you know, live we had great numbers in attendees too, but actually those numbers rocketed when those videos were put up as an on-demand watch. And so we realized, okay, look, the flexibility and the adaptive nature of having something there that you can come back to, or that you can watch when it suits you and your household, etc., is great. And that really helped us shape what we do this year. So this year, the field trips we did have switched to virtual. So we still do the similar thing where we survey the teacher, what have the kids done, except now we're shaping the experience for what they're doing in their classrooms, because we're basically dialing in on a call like this and chatting to the classrooms. Or at the moment, we're running webinars where we're doing the stuff I just talked, you mentioned there, the AI and the ethics. But then the way we jumped on the on-demand side then was because we said, okay, there's our field trip still happening, that's all good, but how do we capitalize on this really real hunger for on-demand content? So we developed Dreamspace TV, which is what you're talking about there, which is great. So what we've developed is 10 episodes for primary schools and 6 episodes for secondary schools. They're both based on the micro bit, but they're kind of also based on obviously developing all the skills that we've talked about as well. So like the primary school episodes, the first 5 actually, there's no coding in them. They're 5 and they're like maker or unplugged challenges that happen. And the idea is in each of those first 5 episodes, the students or the pupils get introduced to coding concepts. So for example, one of the episodes is to create an obstacle course and build one of the obstacles yourself. So we had students and teachers sending us in videos of kids had created hurdles. Like, you should have seen some of it, honestly, Vicky. They blew us away, like, with the submissions they sent us in, like building hurdles and building their own cones and building their own different obstacles and then them running around them. And the idea was that we'd introduce loops. So you have to go over the hurdle 3 times. You have to repeat that 3 times, do this 3 times. So then actually, after the first 5 episodes where they'd done these challenges to understand concepts, when we got to the coding and we were like, okay, how do we repeat that instruction? We knew the kids would be like, loops, because they'd done it in their obstacle course.
That's the hardest thing to explain, isn't it, when it comes to coding. When you come up, tell them about the concept saying, you know, if this, then that, and then it hits to, like, when you want to repeat something in code, when it's all in text format written in an editor. Yeah. And then you're trying to draw on the whiteboard or the blackboard or trying to highlight or draw pictures. It was still hard to explain.
Yeah.
So physically showing them this, because these are all, you're trying to explain that these are instructions you're giving to a computer.
Exactly.
Being able to physically get them to build an obstacle course, having fun, and then realizing that they're actually kind of understanding one particular concept, which is quite hard to explain in general. Never mind kids, I think in general, even to adults trying to see what it looks like. So that's quite cool, because I remember I did, I think it was during Code Week EU, I did a short kind of workshop in Blanche Library, and it was a coding one, but no computers involved again. It was based on their kind of, they have kind of few cards where have arrows and stuff, and you basically get the kids, initially you get the kid, well, I got the kids to draw kind of what their favorite places are. Some of them drew their home, one drew their house, and one drew monuments of sort. And you put them on the floor and you have a start and you tell the teams to go and find the, what they have at hand, or as in they have all the instructions at the top of the room with all the arrows.
Yeah.
And there's only limited supply. So whoever gets there first and pull and figure out, okay, I need to go straight, left, right to get to the end. And there's only so many moves in that grid. And that was, I said that is kind of exactly like coding. And it's sort of similar to what you've been doing, asking, but this is physically building her, which is even more fun because you can use whatever you want.
Yeah,
inside, it was so outside.
Funny. God, like, honestly, you should have seen some of them. There's people sending in things they'd made with wood. And I was like blown away. These are primary school, 4th, 5th, 6th class students. And like, honestly, they just blew us away with what they were doing. It was great to see the teachers sharing all the images with us. But yeah, so that's kind of the primary school. They're sitting, these are all free to access. So we can, I know at the end we're sharing out some links and stuff. So, you know, people can go check them out. You don't have to be a teacher. Like, we have linked them to curriculum, but you can be a parent who's listening and kind of think, oh, I think my kids would like that, you know. And again, it introduces these logical ways of thinking like we do when we code, but just within this kind of maker challenge. Like, there's create a board game, there's create a build a windmill. There's loads of different ones.
All the things that are ticking my boxes. Yeah. Like, you know, it's just like really sounds a lot of fun, you know. You can, you know, people of all ages, and well done to everyone. The production quality has been fantastic.
Yeah, we've a great team. There's a great company we worked with on them called Collateral, and like they were so much fun themselves, to be honest. I think they kind of it made us giddy, I think, when we were doing the episodes, because we were laughing at them more.
But you need that. You need that buzz, because you're not in person and you're making this, and the audience is watching it, have to be excited even before you start into it. Before you just start explaining the project, you want whoever's watching to start running and looking for material and pausing it and things, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And get really excited about it.
Yeah.
So well done to everyone. It was really good. I suppose all this came about because of the lockdown, the COVID-19, and the same for us in Dublin Maker. We had to postpone our Dublin Maker Festival from last summer to this summer. And we're currently planning that at the moment. And because it's looks like this thing is not going away I soon. Know. So it's inevitable. I'm not doing an announcement or anything, but it is. We're going to have one, yeah. And it's not going to be in person because it just can't be done.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of obstacles that came along, and especially last year, it was really hard for everyone. As you went on to do your webinars and all the virtual platforms to engage with your audience. With us, we went to like making these podcasts during summertime because we lost the Maker Festival, so the makers couldn't talk to the general public. The general public couldn't find out more about what makers are doing or find ideas. So why not bring some of the makers to people via the podcast? And then we did during Science Week, we did the Maker a Day, where we brought in some of our makers and did like a 1 hour, whatever they wanted to demo or want to talk about, or workshops, and then put them up so people can access them over and over again. And they had Q&A. So it's kind of, for us, it was a kind of smaller scale, but we did find it really hard to engage with our community as well as the general public when it comes to maker activities and events that we wanted to hold. And I suppose from the past year, one of the solutions is putting stuff on a webinar, and you come with Dreamspace TV. But what other issues did you come across that you had to solve to try to engage the audience? Besides, I suppose, say you have a lot of kits. I know that when people go to Dreamspace, you provide activities and you provide the kits and stuff. And I know Mako kind of alleviate a lot of that because you don't need the physical kits.
Yeah.
But is there kind of other things that I haven't actually thought of? Like, say for me, I'm saying, oh, I think everything's solved now. Should be no problem for everyone to hold a Steam activity, put it up, do a Zoom, stream it onto YouTube.
Yeah.
Done. We're all good. Is there things that people should watch out for? Or if people want to engage, getting back and running these activities and workshops, do you have any kind of, have you come across issues, or do you have any tips, I suppose, for people?
I think one of the things that is still a work in progress for us is it's kind of funny because basically I think we reach more people now because the content's, it's not a physical get on a bus, come up to us situation anymore. It's like, you know, log on to the internet, like watch these episodes, engage on these training, join our webinars to engage with us live in a Q&A, you know, and we have a Dreamspace teacher program. So teachers sign up and we have a community of practice that we're trying to work and develop out with them. So we have all these, and those teachers are all over Ireland. So we have this reach that we didn't have before. However, that's assuming everyone has the access to these things. So I think a big thing for us still is, like, apart from obviously promoting, just giving this exposure to Steam, STEM, whatever you want to say it, I always, people jump between either. So, but apart from just the exposure piece and making sure everyone at least knows what that is and is aware of it. And if they like it, great. If they don't, that's fine too. But apart from that, it's also getting this representation, getting this diversity into STEM that we also don't have. It's reaching underprivileged groups around the country who, you know, don't have broadband access, don't have the devices, don't have the support that they would need, that maybe they would have if they were in school. So I think for us, that's a work in progress. We are engaged in a few projects with Minute University, specifically looking at that representation and how do we increase equity, I suppose, of access to this stuff. And that's a work in progress for us. And I think that's always a priority for us because we talked about earlier trying to make sure that the stuff, like the things like the micro, you don't have to buy it, you know, because we don't want any financial pressures on people. But like, apart from that, though, you still need a device and you still need maybe internet. And that's also not a given for people nowadays.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. I noticed as well with the lockdown and with COVID-19, it highlights the huge digital divide even more. It really just, it's kind of a big wider issue globally. Because a lot of, the powers that be are saying, sure, you could just like do your homeschooling from, you know, everyone can access the internet, you know, and do homes and listen to teachers online and stuff. And that's not a case for a lot of people.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And I suppose with having these activities on top of the homeschooling, you know, that is kind of, it's just as important, because again, it kind of teaches kind of skills that's not normally you find in the curriculum, and it's fun as well. And it's I suppose it's kind of extracurricular activities, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it gives you kind of really good skills. But thing is, it's kind of a problem that unless you start sending out kits to everyone, which is not feasible.
Yes.
Like, what is a way to actually help? You know, so that's kind of, I suppose, one issue that is still ongoing. I don't think anyone has a kind of a feasible kind of solution unless we have money, like,
well, yeah, and I
enough
think
flow
maybe...
of money, like no problem with flow of money from some friendly benefactor, but that is not a solution. A solution has to be very sustainable for everyone and accessible for everyone as well.
Yeah, completely. And like, obviously, it's not feasible for anyone working really in the sector to kind of try and get kits out to everyone. So I think we need to think differently about it. Obviously, there's bigger issues at hand to try and solve this as just a national issue. But in terms of just even in terms of like the types of activities you do then, or that we do, let's make them achievable offline. You know, like you did earlier, you mentioned in the Blanche Library, like the unplugged approach. You know, let's set challenges that have options that you don't need to physically, you know, do something on a device with this hardware, that like you can do that if you have it, great. If you don't, why not try the challenge in this way and make it achievable? So in the meantime, like, that's I suppose what we're trying to do, is trying to kind of think, like, I suppose use empathy, like let's put ourselves in the shoes of these people, the variety of different people, and ensure that everyone has a chance as much as possible to kind of do these activities. So that would be the advice I would give, is kind of think, put yourself in the people's shoes, of your audience's shoes, and their access. And, you know, I suppose, I'm sure they do, everyone listening does this anyway. Yeah, just don't make assumptions, I suppose, about what people have or haven't, you know.
It's kind of I suppose that with the high level lockdown that we have here in Ireland, that means like places like libraries are closed. So that it makes it even harder, you know. And I know some libraries are putting in makerspaces, and just at the cusp of, you know, many are opening, and they had to close like last year, which is a shame. And even just the spaces for people just to just having those activities with like CodeWeek.eu and I think the Hour of Code and all those kind of you know, all those kind of activities you can do at home. But it's I think everyone is looking forward to having some sort of in person, because as you say, you know, you learn from each other. It's when you learn by yourself, it's really hard, because you don't have that feedback apart from, you know, people that may or may not have their videos on a Zoom call. And because of the younger audiences, they will have to have parents there as well. And then not everyone has that access to internet access, or maybe they have the one device in the house, and someone needs it for work, someone needs it for homework, and not everyone can use it for multiple, like you have that one device is used for multiple activities. So I'm looking forward to at least when some of the public services open up, like the libraries, that, you know, at least they have access to a lot of the programs that you have, that that people can find out about, kind of like another resource, and also get some advice. So, but like, I suppose you focus a lot to teachers. Do you actually talk to other, like, say I mentioned libraries before, do you actually approach libraries, services like libraries, about what you do? Or is it just, as you say, you build it around teachers, like primary and secondary schools?
I think it's anything that's educational in general, we're happy to collaborate with people. So primary, secondary, we work with the Reach sector as well. Corey and our team is from that background. Like I mentioned, we're lucky on the team to have a variety, primary, secondary and youth reach. So we work with all of them. Libraries, we've worked in previously, and like hopefully can continue to collaborate with them, and a few other projects that, you know, are hopefully in the pipeline outside of the normal school environment as well. And I don't know if I'm allowed to mention them, so I'm just not going to say anything, just in case I get in trouble. But like, yeah, look, I suppose the point I'll be trying to make is like, just like contact us, you know, like let us know if you have an idea, or, you know, like not just like yourself, Vicky, or anyone, you know, let us know. And like, we, like, you know, we're better together, really, like, and we're all kind of have the probably the same ambition, which is as I said, like giving this exposure, this opportunity to the young people of Ireland to experience this stuff, you know, this area of STEAM. So they know what it is, they know how it could potentially impact them, how it could potentially influence their future, the opportunities it give them. And if they learn something new and if it opens up their eyes and they think, wow, this is for me, amazing. If 1 in 30 think that, happy days, you know, like that's our job, like you know.
Yeah, the opening of the opportunities and understanding what this the science, technology, engineering, arts and maths, what like this we mean talked about so much, but and I suppose kids are saying, oh my god, they're on about STEAM again. But thing is, I'm not interested in tech, I'm not very good at maths, you know, all those kind of things in here you hear in passing. But it is also affects everyone because we are surrounded by technology. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't end up in a technical role, you might end up someone who might be designing how the look and feel of something, the usability of something, say how things are accessible, so as a product, or you might end up being a project manager. And I keep telling the kids out there, look, these tech companies, they also need finance people, they also need HR. You know, there's lots of different roles, but you have to understand what the company is making, understand why these are important, and you know, so it's kind of everything is kind of linked in a way. Mm. I suppose like right now, like be a good time to ask like what kind of activities, you know, do you want to shout out to people, or are you planning, or are you not supposed to say? What are the ones that that are upcoming that you've announced or you're going to announce? And we'll put them on our event page and shout out elsewhere as well. So be good to let our listeners know what plans you have coming up.
Of course. So our a good place to start always is our website, so dreamspace.ie. Because on there, then, like, even if you're not a teacher, you might be able to share with your school the opportunity to engage with us. You know, you could sign up for our newsletter there, which in our newsletter we let you know about all our upcoming events, like whether they be live webinars, whether it be, you know, our bookings are opening on our website, whether it be the new kind of resources that we have, that we've developed, like we make announcements generally first through the newsletter, so you can sign up on the website for that. And then on the website then is also the link to Dreamspace TV, so that's a good kind of, you know, based on the audience here as well, with the likes of, you know, the kind of the maker idea. Both, as I said, the two Dreamspace TV series, is that we have the primary series for kind of roughly 4th to 6th class kind of age group, so you know, 9 to 12, and then we have the secondary school series, which is actually lined up with the Do Your Bit Challenge. So one of the good exciting opportunities for young people at the moment, and maybe particularly that secondary school age group, would be to watch those Dreamspace TV for secondary school episodes. You learn about visual programming in the first two, then we actually toggle to Python for the following three, and then we do a design thinking episode in the final episode to gear people up to enter the global Microbit Do Your Bit Challenge. And we also will be able to celebrate the winner of the Do Your Bit Challenge. So we'll know who the Irish top scored Irish mark is, and we're going to be able to celebrate that with RTE. So RTE are also hosting all these Dreamspace TV episodes, which is fantastic. And we'll be able to make a big celebration then for the Irish champions, as we keep saying. We had a little tagline, come on you students in green, for the Do Your Bit Challenge. So but primary school students can also enter the Do Your Bit Challenge as well, and the Dreamspace TV for primary school episodes would give them enough info on the Microbit and coding, as we mentioned, through maker tasks, to kind of enter too. So they would be the ones I would at the moment really shout out to, because I think they're on demand, you can go to them at your leisure. Students and young people can kind of independently work their way through them. There's resources sitting up there to kind of support with that. So in the environment we're in nowadays, where we're at home and we're looking for something different to do, you know, I would say definitely go check them out. But you can see all the other things on dreamspace.ie as well.
Wow, that is a lot of stuff. Yeah. With a lot of, as you say, a lot of in-person formats have changed in context with COVID now, that people have to adapt to different ways of engaging people, whoever our audience is, and trying to make that accessible. So dreamspace.ie is the site.
Yes.
There's a lot of, I noticed that there's a lot of additional resources and contacts for people if they're looking at there's just a lot of information there,
like
from STEM education policies to your resources for your courses, to any educators and STEM libraries and stuff. There's just a lot of stuff there. So in the few years that you've just done so much, it's amazing. I just remember me standing around just in awe, jaw dropped at the space stuff. Like that picture behind you, that's only a small tiny section.
A lot of students think this background, for people listening, this is the background of Dreamspace behind me and a virtual background. And a lot of people think like I'm in the room, and I'm like, no, it's the background. But look, it's a team effort, Vicky. We have an amazing group, and we're really lucky to have the backing in Microsoft Ireland as well, that we get, like, where they literally have just said, look, you go and literally like do your outreach, support young people, like, you know, give them these opportunities. So I think we're very lucky with the setup we have and with the team we have. So we appreciate it, but we know we're lucky to have the group we have to back this.
Great if we can actually do something and collaborate together.
Absolutely.
Because, we definitely cross over on a lot of things, both myself personally, as well as being part of the Double Maker team doing stuff. So I suppose we can start wrapping up. And since I already asked you what kind of activities you're planning and stuff, thank you so much for telling us about what you do in Dreamspace and all the fantastic team, all the work they've been doing, all the journey from the beginnings of in-person events until COVID forced everyone to rethink how we do things, and then because of that, the reach went, we can go further and reach out to people and connect with people. But as well as that, we hit across problems where the huge digital divide of some people that we still can't access, say, even like people, as you say, it's not just the deprived areas, like the inner cities. It's even in the middle of the country when when people just don't even have, not even broadband, not even cell coverage at all. And and that was kind of hark back to the days when, someone asked, like, can I run a coding workshop out in Longford? Because the closest they can get someone was from Maynooth. And I go, I just couldn't believe it. Yeah. And that was years ago. And now we're hitting across the problem so many years later where still we don't have the people with the skill set, and even if we do now with more reach, because everyone's gone online, but then we still have the problem of all those black spots areas around the country where people have no access altogether. And then we have the folks who just don't have access to, there is broadband area, they just don't have access to a device or have those connections at all. So there's still a lot of problems and issues that COVID has highlighted. So I don't know if there's, we're all working towards the same thing, and hopefully we can, step by step, even if it's slow, bring these kind of activities and skills, which everyone should have an opportunity to have. I'd like to say thank you to joining us on our podcast, and say amazing work to everyone on the team, being on and off watching all the fantastic, as I said your production quality on the Dreamspace TV blew me away. So people should go watch it. But yeah, anything else? People should, if there's someone to get hold of you, how do they get hold of you then?
If people are on, I suppose, our probably biggest social channels on Twitter. So at @ms_edu_irl for Microsoft Education Ireland, or myself, it's at msajolliffe. So I'm sure we can, I don't know if you can share that. It might be a hard one. People, the best of times, can't spell my name, so, which is fine. It's okay.
You can send it to me, and I'll update the podcast page, as well as anywhere else. We'll kind of, when we shout out about it, we'll put that in as well.
Perfect.
And we'll at you. And that's the end of this episode of the Dublin Maker Podcast. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Amanda. If you want to find out more, head over to their website, dreamspace.ie. I'll put in more information in the podcast page below. And remember to hit that subscribe button to our podcast. We are also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And take care, stay safe. And this is Vicky signing off from the Dublin Maker Podcast.